Around the NFL Podcast. Won't have a bye until February.
Damn right. Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast, presented by the United States Marine Corps. My name is Dan Hansis, coming to you from a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Week 16, flagship show. Can you even believe it? So much to look forward to if you're an NFL fan, if you're a podcast fan. Not only do we have a lot of big games coming up, the playoffs, the Super Bowl. Also, as we announced at the end of our show on Thursday, the Around the NFL live podcast from Miami. Oh, my goodness, the Thursday of Super Bowl week from the Miami Improv. If you want to get tickets, hit miamiimprov.com/events and just scroll down the calendar. You'll see it. Also, on our Instagram page, the ATN Pod. Is that what it is? The ATN Podcast?
Yes.
You could get the link in the bio as well of our profile. Get tickets. Bring your friends. Let's party.
Bring many friends, please.
We'll tweet it. We'll pin it on the Twitter account around the NFL, too. We'll try to get some special guests. Maybe Gloria Estefan.
Wow, an owner.
One of the Williams sisters. Basically, yes, the entire ownership group of the Dolphins we're going to gun for. And if we can't, Mark Sessler personally will spend time with each and every one of you after the show.
Yes, I will. And whenever we do these traveling shows, and it's been a couple Super Bowls, it's a treasure emotionally to find out, you know, we're very big in Miami, and it's just that that's being confirmed through a lot of factors, factual things.
Traveling
so it's exciting,
shows.
You know.
That was quite a point, Mark. all right, so yes, be there. That's going to be fun. We're looking forward to it. We have a lot to get to. Oh, my goodness. Greg, this is one of your biggest weeks of the season in terms of playoff computations. This is when we really lean on you. And you understand that. You know that.
I've been, you know, preparing. I got extra sleep. I did push-ups. Those calculator buttons, you know, don't press themselves.
Plus, your family's out of town. They've left you.
Yeah.
For Japan.
Yeah.
And you now have all this time to yourself. I don't know what you're doing with all this time.
I've heard some strange reports.
I just hope all that free time doesn't lead to faulty computations.
I hope so. I mean, I hope you're right.
All right, so we're going to get to all the games. There were three games, of course, on Saturday, and we'll get to them in fairly short order. But let's start with a couple Sunday games that really jumped out to us. Yes, including one that could very well end up deciding the NFC East. So let's start in the city of brotherly love.
Prescott, back. Prescott steps up. He is firing deep, and it is incomplete. Incomplete.
Sidney
Broken
Jones.
Up by Sidney Jones, who made the play of the day against the Giants 2 weeks ago.
Well, Sidney Jones just made the play of the day because he is stride for stride down the sideline and able to get the football out intended for Michael Gallup down that left side.
This game is not over yet.
Oh, but it was Brad Sham, the Sham God, and Babe Laufenberg with the call for KRLD. Yes, Sidney Jones broke up Dak Prescott's fourth down pass to Michael Gallup in the end zone. And then the Eagles were able to complete a first down pass, run for another first down, and end the game. They win 17-9 over the Eagles. And the Cowboys had a chance, West, to win the division. Didn't come close in this one. And the Eagles are the team. They're playing like a true team when it matters most. And the Cowboys, they just seem to be busting apart at the seams.
Well, I think it's the second time in 3 weeks where you look at the Cowboys operation and the blame just gets spread across the board. Starting with the coaching staff, they were just running into stacked boxes. Seemed like the entire first half on early downs when the Eagles' cornerbacks were injured. They were lining up to take numbers at the medical tent for a while for the Eagles. There were so many injuries. And the matchups, you could tell, was the Cowboys wide receivers on the Eagles cornerbacks, and they kept running on early downs. And then you spread the blame to the players because, you know, Amari Cooper drops, Jason Witten drop, Randall Cobb a couple of drops, Michael Gallup drop, Dak Prescott, who's got a bum shoulder, a couple of misfires, especially the Tavon Austin, got wide open on the final drive with a chance for a long touchdown. There was a third down throw that Dak missed Amari Cooper. The defense could not stop the Eagles' screenplays and Miles Sanders. It was just a poor effort across the board. And I this is to play like that with the season on the line twice in 3 weeks, just terrible.
I look at the passing game, and I know Dak Prescott's injured, but it's 2019, and you're dropping back to pass 44 times. And the Eagles didn't really have much pressure on him. They ended up with 4 QB hits on the day, didn't have a ton of hurries. If you look at the PFF pass blocking grades, it's all great. So you get great pass protection. You got Dak, you got Amari, you got Cobb, you got all these players, and you can't throw the ball against a team that, in the Eagles, that's given up some pretty big point totals to some pretty bad offenses lately.
It's, I feel like whoever lost this game was going to face essentially a home city firing squad because, you know, Troy Aikman notably called this this Eagles win the best team win he's ever seen, which that shocks me because it feels a tad...
Feels like Troy's in his feelings a little
bit. Just, it feels a tad hyperbolic because I wouldn't be surprised if next week the Cowboys went out and wiped out Team X and the Eagles lost and they're both 8-8. The Eagles, to me, it's not, Dallas Goedert, guys stepping up when Zach Ertz is out, that's huge and that's a big win, but that's still a very inconsistent team, both of them.
I think Troy is referencing the fact that even if the Eagles were healthy, the Cowboys have a much better roster at this point, and they weren't healthy. They were decimated by injuries, and the Cowboys still have an incredibly more talented roster than the Eagles at this point in the season, and the undermanned Eagles just took it to the Cowboys.
And if you want to make the case that Jason Garrett has overstayed his welcome and it's finally time to say goodbye, I understand it, and I think anybody that says that's not something that should be done really better have a good reason why, because Garrett has not made the most of this team. But then it's like, the only thing, and I bring this up occasionally on this podcast, the only thing that gets on my radar a little bit when people get mad at a coaching staff or a head coach is, man, where is the accountability on the players in this game? To your point, Wes, how many big plays and game-changing plays, that Tavon Austin overthrow by Dak, the drops by Gallup, these plays are absolutely on a team that is not stepping up when it matters most, when it counts. And maybe it's a personnel issue as much as it is a coaching issue. And that's just the story of this Cowboys season, that everybody kind of faltered. It wasn't just a head coach's fault.
I agree with that the players have to take some of the brunt of the blame. But it's on the coaches to stress the urgency here. And for the past month, the urgency here for a team that is way more talented than any other NFC East team. And that hasn't been done. And a guy like Joe Banner, who, you know, I know some people like him, don't like him, used to be the president of the Browns, president of the Eagles, spent the entire game pointing out the specific areas
on
in
Twitter.
Which Jason, yes, on Twitter, the specific areas in which Jason Garrett was getting outcoached, in which the Cowboys defensive staff was getting outcoached. And then you see things like Jason Garrett punting on 4th-and-1 in the fourth quarter, and then the very next drive going for it on 4th-and-8, and the drive after that going for it on 4th-and-9, and it's like, what's the logic here?
And on the key snap of the game, Amari Cooper's not in there. Amari Cooper told reporters he was pulled out by coaches. That wasn't a case of him pulling himself out. There was also a key 3rd-and-1 where Zeke apparently, you know, hit his helmet that he wanted to be taken out, which is going to get attention. I'm sure he was tired and all of that, but that's a play that you expect Ezekiel Elliott to want the ball and to be on the field.
Yeah, it's like they have 3 more wins, the Cowboys do, than the New York Giants. It is completely unacceptable. From where we were at the beginning of the season, you looked at this roster up and down, that the blame is spread everywhere, but the coaching staff has found a way year after year to not maximize the roster.
Well, they can't. I really do think there is something unique about Dallas that, because of Jerry Jones and the way he treats his players, because the way the city treats their players, that they struggle with success. And just because it keeps happening. Every single time they have a good season and they expect the next season's going to be
every
one,
year.
It never happens. Because football, there's such a small margin between these teams. When you lose a little bit of that edge, it's huge. And I think the biggest mistake Jones made in the Garrett era was 2013, after their 3rd straight 8-8, when Garrett had blown so many game management situations over and over and over again. And to me, that felt like the time that where he had shown that he wasn't your coach. And here you are another 6 years later, headed to an 8-8 and maybe the playoffs. You said it. I can totally see them winning next week and the Eagles losing that game to the Giants. The Cowboys have the Redskins. I mean, I don't think this thing is necessarily over.
We've mentioned this before. This season has been so up and down.
I think the Eagles will win, by the way, but it's just possible that
you'd like to think that, but weirder things have happened in our universe than 2 weeks from now. We're talking about the Cowboys in the wild card round having shocked a team at home, team like the Seahawks.
Or the Eagles, and I just want to give the Eagles the credit they deserve here. Because
absolutely.
Yeah.
Carson Wentz leading the way for the past 3 weeks. How could you not be ultra impressed with him? In the last 2 years, he's been basically sidelined by injuries this time of year. And what you've been able to see, and even today, another example. We already have, he has almost nothing to work with at the wide receiver position. This game, he loses Zach Ertz, who is his security blanket, his all-everything. Some quarterbacks would go into a shell at that point, and he would have a perfectly good excuse. In this case, Dallas Goedert, and to Goddard's, on him, good for him, he was able to step up in a big spot here. 9 for 91 and a touchdown, and they just made the plays, and he's played mistake-free ball, and as sloppy as Wentz was when they were struggling, these last 3 weeks, he has been exactly who they've needed.
Greg Ward outplayed Amari Cooper today, and we touched on this in the preview of this game, that the Eagles have something on offense now that they didn't have a month ago. Greg Ward, Dallas Goedert, Zach Ertz, Miles Sanders. This is way more than they had working for them a month ago.
And Carson Wentz.
And Wentz, the difference today, I thought, was in these third and short situations, in these third down situations, Wentz found a way to move the chains, whether it was by rushing, whether it was avoiding pressure and hitting receivers. Dak did not find a way to make those plays.
And as good as Wentz has been playing late in the season, Miles Sanders has over 300 yards in the last 2 weeks.
That's huge for them.
That is monster. You're getting Christian McCaffrey. Granted, it's 2 weeks, but he had some games before that. But you're getting Christian McCaffrey production out of Miles Sanders the last 2 weeks.
He's now one of five rookies in history to have 500 yards rushing and receiving in the same rookie season.
The Eagles are a win at the Meadowlands against the Giants away in week 17 from the NFC East title. Let's move on. The Saints are a team that will be playing postseason football, and they had a chance to strengthen their chances at a bye in Nashville. What happened?
Breeze under center here, I formation. Josh Hill motions left to right. Breeze is going to look to throw. Rolling to his right, throws, and it's caught. And guess who? Michael Thomas. From 2 yards out, Mike Thomas gets the touchdown back, and he now extends his lead 145 receptions in one football season with a game to go.
Look out now. Zach Strief, Saints Radio Network, with the call. Yes, in Week 15, it was Drew Brees making NFL history. In Week 16, it was Michael Thomas's turn. Thomas set the single-season catch record and caught the game-icing touchdown pass you just heard in a 38-28 win over the Titans in Nashville. At 12-3, the Saints remain in the hunt for the number one seed in the NFC. Greg, this was another impressive win for a Saints team that looks ready to do some damage in January, regardless of where they fall in the playoff bracket.
They look like a Super Bowl team to me, and I think Super Bowl teams have these check marks games that they have to go through. And they lost that tough one against the 49ers a couple weeks ago, but down 14-3 on the road, you have two of your starting offensive linemen out of the game, you're offense, and Drew Brees was just furious through the first five drives of this game. They had one field goal and four punts, and you're playing a good team on a short week, and they score five touchdowns in their next six possessions, and they put up 38 points in Tennessee. And Tennessee's a little banged up in the secondary. They were without Derrick Henry in this game as well. And Jeffrey Simmons was out. They might have been looking a little bit to week 17 just in terms of those decisions, but they were playing as hard as they can. And for an offense to just take over, that's the Saints to me. And I really love their chances of getting a bye. We'll have to see what happens in the next couple days or next week or so. But they are putting themselves in position to be in the Super Bowl.
There's a lot of bubbling up on Twitter of when they were struggling against the Titans at one point in this game that, oh, it's just like every other Saints team. You put them outside, they're not going to be able to do anything, and that's going to happen. But no, I think that there's a reason for that belief, because it has been true of Dome teams, and it's been true of Drew Brees.
But it hasn't been true of this New Orleans Saints team. They're 6-1 on the road this year versus 6-2 at home. They have the best record in the NFL on the road over the last 3 years. So if they got some bad luck and did have to play some games on the road and don't get that bye like they're hoping for, I do think that this is a team that can beat anyone anywhere in the NFC.
How did Alvin Kamara look?
He looked like a different Alvin Kamara, especially on his touchdown run. Just the speed was there. He still didn't make guys miss in the open field, but it felt like a relief for him to get that 40-yard touchdown run. He had added another touchdown later in the game, had 110 total scrimmage yards. So I think they feel much better when he's running like that, especially because they will get their linemen back, they believe.
The one thing that happened in this game that to me was just a ghastly moment officiating-wise, and it deserved a longer look, was the Khalif Raymond fumble for the Titans.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, stopped by one defender, but the second one coming in, I saw helmet-to-helmet contact, and you mentioned that the broadcast didn't really, they kind of let it float by. That's the kind of thing. That was a key moment in that contest, and it kind of killed Tennessee's chances.
It goes both ways. It's become impossible to kind of accurately get that right because the game's moving so fast. And how many times have we seen 15-yard penalties assessed on a team that did not land a head-to-head blow?
But in that case, it was stopped because they were checking. It was on a turnover to set the
stage.
But
can you call that on challenge?
You could have. Mike Vrabel did, note after the game. Look, they looked at that play, and when they look at that play, they can look at everything. That's one of the things that they can look at. So that happened on a turnover. Khalif Raymond fumbled the ball like right when he got hit. It appeared to be contacted in the head. The Saints pick it up, and then they go for a touchdown in the fourth quarter to go up 10. So it was a huge spot. The Titans fought really well all game, and I guess the officiating, back in New York, decided it wasn't enough to overturn it.
And the Derrick Henry sitting, I'm sure there are a lot of fantasy owners that were devastated by that. But that could end up being a brilliant move by them because they're in the playoffs. They got to beat the Texans, and then they need the Steelers to lose to the Ravens, if I'm correct, Greg.
They don't even.
Computations.
Yeah, they just need to win.
That's all they need, win and in.
They didn't know that when they started today, but they knew that next week was going to be the key game, and Pittsburgh loss helped them out. They can also get in with a Pittsburgh and Indianapolis loss. If those two teams lose next week, Tennessee wouldn't even have to win. But it's a weird day for Tennessee because they came out of it, despite the loss, in better shape than they were going into it because of the Pittsburgh game, and feeling even better about Ryan Tannehill. It took a couple more sacks, but God, it's amazing how well he's throwing the football. He's throwing the football, like the ball, as well as I would say any, like a top five quarterback. He threw it great again. It was the only reason they were in this game. There were a ton of big plays in both directions. He made some great
plays. And I saw a couple plays where the Saints were right in his face, in his grill, and he got the ball. It just looks like a completely different player than he was in
Miami. The concern would be their offensive line, which was definitely a problem. He held the ball too long a few times, but Taylor Lewan had a rough day, and in general, he had to make some tough throws.
And the Texans are likely locked in to their seed, or they can't make a move into the bye. So you would imagine the Titans might be facing a Texans team that's not playing everybody or playing big snaps next week. So things could be all right for Tennessee, despite
tricky.
What happened today.
It's going to be one of the stories, not to spoil, like what teams do want to play next week. Because the Texans will, in theory, have seeding to play for no matter what. It's the 3 and 4 seed, though. So how much do you care about that? And you're going to need to get help to move up and get that 3 seed. It might not be
J.J. Watt ain't playing.
Well, that's for sure.
Texans are shallow. They need to keep their players healthy.
Yep.
All right. Let us now check in on the Saturday games. Let's roll through them, and we'll start with the Saturday night game up at the Berg Bell Bottom.
Garoppolo in the gun, Kittle to his left, Raheem Mostert to his right. They twist the front. Garoppolo going to throw a deep shot down the field. Emmanuel Sanders has got it. They ever touch him? He can still run, I think. I'm not sure they touched him down. In any event, the 49ers are in field goal range. It is Robbie Gould time. What a shot there on 3rd and 16. They pick up 46 on the post route to Emmanuel Sanders.
Greg Papa with the call for the 49ers Radio Network. The Niners seem to be involved in late-game dramatics every week. This week, they were on the right side of the ledger. Emmanuel Sanders, 46-yard catch, set up a chip shot, Robbie Gould field goal. His time ran out. 49ers win 34-31 over the Rams. The loss eliminates Los Angeles from postseason contention nearly 11 months after they made it all the way to the Super Bowl. And you know, this is a game that it's still coming down to Niners Rams next week, but you wanted a Niners team coming off that really bad Atlanta game. You didn't want to lose another one here and put yourselves in a situation where you feel like you're trending downward in the wrong direction. So credit to them. Also, you know, that's a tough game against the Rams team that was desperate for a win. The Rams needed to win twice and get Minnesota to lose twice to get back to the playoffs, and instead they get the job done. And if on the Rams side of the ball, I mean, it was such a frustrating season for the Rams after that 3-0 start. They just could never really get things going, and you wonder what lies ahead for this team. But I thought it was just fitting the way that this game, you know, the play that you just heard went down, where Jalen Ramsey and the safety had a miscommunication. I don't think it was Ramsey's fault, but
Ramsey called out safety Taylor Rapp as saying after the game that he blew the assignment. I don't know if you want players saying that about each other, but that's.
I mean, Charles Davis said it on the broadcast too. Taylor Rapp was guarding air. There was no one anywhere near
Taylor. Also, Jalen Ramsey got beat on the play.
And who was responsible for what, it was a coverage bust that absolutely could not happen in that spot, and kind of a crushing way for your season essentially to be ruined, to break down mentally in that spot. So the Rams go home, and the Niners are feeling good against a compromised Seahawks team coming up in Week 17.
Feels like there's been so many crucible moments for Jimmy Garoppolo over the second half of the season. He's won some, he's lost some, but I don't get the doubt at this point. We know that at this point he's not a guy where the moment ever seems too big for him.
I mean, despite his lack of experience coming into this year, who's more battle-tested for January than Jimmy G as we head toward the playoffs?
They went from a team that won a lot of games by a lot of points to about seven straight weeks, many of which against really good teams have all been, you know, knuckling down?
White knuckling.
What does that even mean, the white knuckle?
I don't know.
You're so tight that the...
I think working men of the past knew what that meant. I'm not sure we do.
It's like your hands are on the steering wheel and all you can see is white knuckles.
Ooh. And he didn't even play that well in this game. I mean, that's the weird thing about this game. You watch it. It wasn't a great Jimmy G game overall until the end. And Jared Goff played incredible. It's one of the weird things about this Rams season is you couldn't get everything going right at the same time. Jared Goff made four or five throws in this game that were as good or better than any Jimmy G's.
And a soul-crushing mistake.
Yeah, and one big mistake. But put up 31 on the 49ers, even giving up a pick six, you expect to win that game, and it could have repercussions. Mike Silver hinted at that in his column that Wade Phillips could be a goner after this year, and maybe Todd Gurley too.
And from the 49ers at this point, you wonder what their identity is, and to me it just seems like it's George Kittle. Hop on his back, let one of the five best players in the NFL take you there, and he will.
Two third and 16 conversions setting up.
It was outrageous.
Field goal, the second being that coverage bust that we mentioned. I think the one thing that jumped out to me a little bit that I'd be concerned with if I was a 49ers fan was the offensive line. Garoppolo didn't have a lot of time in this game. There were a lot of times the pocket was pretty jacked up, and we know they lost Weston Richburg, the center, to an injury, some bad snaps in this game. You imagine not every team has an Aaron Donald and a Dante Fowler, but in January, they're going to be coming after Garoppolo, and you can't protect him. He's going to make mistakes. He's not a flawless quarterback, and if you put the pressure on him, he could throw a game away, I think.
Would anyone have a problem with Kyle Shanahan winning Coach of the Year? I guess it's outside of the Ravens situation. That, to me, he stands out.
I think it's John Harbaugh.
I wouldn't have a problem though. Those would be my two, and it seems basic because they've got the best records. But I also think, you know, in Harbaugh's case, they have the most creative offense, the most creative defense, and he's the one that put it in charge. But in Shanahan's case, what team has overcome more adversity in terms of injuries and been competing every week? Even their three losses were all, you know, at the last second. He's done a good job.
They don't have that outlier game or two where they just didn't show up single week.
Their team, it's kind of the opposite of the Rams. Their team seems to pick each other up. I'd be a little concerned the defense isn't nearly as dominant as it was early in the year, but they still have the personnel there where you think that with the right matchup and in the playoffs that they're certainly, like last night when when I'm watching this 49ers defense, I'm always thinking their defense is going to make a play, and they did make a couple.
I feel like the arrow's been pointing up on Gurley in the second half. And I know due to his contract, it'd be very hard to get out from under it. Would they be that desperate to lose him? I know he didn't have a big yardage day in this game, but I don't know. He has been moving better in the second half. I guess maybe they're looking for a fresh start Maybe we're in that territory.
I feel like a lot of changes could be coming to the – I mean, and Mike Silver noted it, but – you know, this is, they put themselves in a kind of win now mode where they're not winning now and they have no draft picks coming up. You know, there are some questionable transactions and moves attached to that front office.
Silver's column, which was very good, made it seem like McVay was more pressing for more changes after this loss than the Super Bowl loss, that he took this one harder.
Hmm. All right, let's check in on the early game on Saturday.
Empty backfield now for Jameis Winston. Here's the snap. Winston, quick throw left side. Intercepted at the 40-yard line. Jahleel Adai with the pick. The Texans have the ball at the 38 with 1:27 left. And the Bucs with only one timeout.
Mark Vandermeer with the call for the Texans.
Oh, here we go.
Uh-oh.
For the Texans.
Copland.
For the Texans. All the Texans. Did you miss this last week, Mark?
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
Bring me the girl.
Sacrifice her to the great beast.
There's Mark. Look at those moves. Why am I the last person remaining in that graphic?
That's how it would be in real life.
Oh.
The Texans forced 5 turnovers. Bradley,
Forced.
Robbie,
return.
The Texans were the recipient of 5 turnovers, 4 from the quarterback, Jameis Winston, including a pick 6. The 6th pick 6 by Winston, tying an NFL record. And yes, that interception you heard basically put the Bucs in a body bag. 23-20, Texans win, clinching the AFC South. For the 4th time in 5 years. Mark, we had an idea that the Houston DBs could have some opportunity with Winston missing his top 2 receivers, and that's exactly how it played out.
What a roller coaster. I mean, the day started with Ian Rappaport of NFL Network reporting that the Bucs intend to bring Winston back based on this hot month that he's had.
Don't leak that out until after week 17. That's the lesson,
that's,
as always.
The timing, you know, and then hours later... This stat absolutely is fascinating to me that when we went to London and we saw Jameis Winston against the Panthers throw 5 interceptions, that announcing booth included Rich Eisen, and he did the game yesterday along with Joe Thomas,
who
in his first day as an announcer, Joe Thomas saw an insane opening 15 or 20 minutes. But Rich Eisen led booths have now witnessed 9 Jameis Winston interceptions in the course of 2 games. I mean, and I will say this about the Bucs, though, and watching this at home, it made me just love Saturday football. This would have been one I would have caught on Game Pass and condensed late, but the way that it unfolded, and finally you got that Tampa Bay field under clouds, and it looked nice. Glorious. Forget that hideous Tampa Bay sun. But, I mean, the Bucs, to me, struck me as very resilient because a number of calls, you could point to a number of calls that went against them that seemed totally ridiculously unfair. And Bruce Arians, I thought, was going to maybe get booted from this game at one point because he was red hot furious with the officials. And there was a moment where an official came over to circle back and kind of explain the latest debacle. And you could sort of see Arians saying, get the F out of here.
I mean, his face matches his red hat and his red pullover head coach jacket at this stage in his life. I worry about the man's health.
But he had a reason to be hot. And, you know, the Texans, the Bucs' run defense has been lights out for a long time. And they absolutely smothered what Houston tried to do on the ground. 2.6 yards per carry. Deshaun Watson, you know, they lost Will Fuller, and I think that seems to happen every week to them. And then their passing game never really, I thought, got unhooked for the most part. They put it to Houston. I thought this game was going to go Tampa Bay's way for a while because it's one of those things where it was started so ugly for Winston and the rest. And then they still were only down like 10-3 and hanging around. And the Texans, and they're an up-and-down team, were refusing to put them away. But, you know, Winston did what he does at the end,
too. It did feel that way. Like this was a game that Houston let get away and it would destroy them. And but it didn't because, to the Texans' credit, they do find a way usually, and they have their hiccups every so often, but they do a good job closing games out. But at the same time, one of my big takeaways from the game was that they're in trouble again because, and I thought with the Will Fuller injury, it's another soft tissue injury. This time it's a groin, And it doesn't look good. And Bill O'Brien, after the game, he was fairly blunt in his assessment. He was saying what everybody else is thinking, and you can understand why frustration has set in. Here's the quote. He's a great guy, and I love coaching him, but it is hard for him to stay healthy. That's the bottom line. And there's tons of next-gen stats, and anywhere you look that will point out how much better this offense has been with Fuller on the field. But it's almost gotten to the point where you just have to assume he's not on the field, and that's something that they're going to have to look to address in the offseason.
That's where that Kenny Stills addition by B.O.B. makes him again. That those early season trades made some sense for the Texans.
I mean, Jameis Winston was missing his top two receivers, and he moved the ball. And that's perhaps a little bit unfair because he can throw caution to the wind with no consequence.
Well, their offense is better lately. It's better than – well, I don't know about better.
I feel like it's physically impossible for Winston's decision-making process to ever factor in risk. I mean, he could have thrown another couple in this game. We talked about going into this game, he was 6 picks away from the hollowed – actually, no one's ever established it yet – 30-30 club, 30 touchdowns, 30 picks. He is now up to 28. It seems like a mortal lock that he's going to set.
It's going to happen.
He mentioned after the game that his goal for the final game would be to protect the ball and avoid turnovers. And it's like you'd have to change the way you're wired.
That's not who he is.
The first half to me was the culmination of his entire career. It was everything. Right. It was them falling down 17-3. Him having all of those turnovers right off the bat, then getting it all the way, 4 turnovers, I believe, in the first half.
Yeah, by first 18 minutes.
Yeah, and 3 by him. But getting it back to 17 all at halftime, including a terrific play right before the half to tie it, in that they were leading in yardage 281 to 83, but it was a tie game. And like that is the Bucs experience. I mean, in this game, they held the Texans to 229 yards. And that's not just because, you know, they're giving short fields with all these turnovers and they get extra possessions. It's because the Texans couldn't really move the ball throwing or passing. If there's one thing I think Bucs fans should feel, I think there's a few things Bucs fans should feel good about. One, this offense is working. I mean, whether Winston should be the quarterback or not, I think that's a totally fair question. Maybe he shouldn't be, and finding another one's not easy. But I don't know. You put someone else here with Bruce Arians and Godwin and Evans, and I bet it's going to be pretty good too. And then the defense is the main thing that surprised me. Their young secondary has stepped up. I mean, Murphy Bunting, who you've talked a lot about, Wes, who's played great. Carlton Davis shut down DeAndre Hopkins pretty well.
Yeah,
this is about 5 weeks where their defense has played well. So I think I'd feel pretty good about that if you're a Bucs fan.
And Deshaun Watson was grabbing at his ankle at multiple points in this game. We mentioned it earlier. They can't really move too much in the playoffs. They're either going to be the 3 seed or the 4 seed. There's a lot, you know, you can make a case for keeping Watson on the bench and getting him ready for a wild card matchup.
Right, and they would need a Chiefs loss even to have a chance to move up anyhow in Week 17, which is unlikely the way that the Chiefs are playing in general. It is a fair question.
I just wonder.
They're very possibly going to be hosting Buffalo Saturday afternoon in that first wild card spot.
The new West of us.
Buffalo is locked into the 5 seed, spoiler alert, and the Texans would most likely be the team hosting.
What's changed for me with the Texans is I don't believe in their ceiling the same way I did 6 weeks ago. The idea of ceiling being if you play the way they were capable of when they blew up the Patriots, that they're going to do that 3 games in a row in the playoffs.
AFC is a little deeper, too. Or it's better at the top. You know, a lot of times it's the Patriots, maybe one other team. Now you've got at least 2 or 3 teams that are going to be tough to get through.
Are there more Texans games than Bengal games on West of Us now, Wes? Has it reached that point?
Wow, it's close.
West of Us being the Saturday early wild card round game that the Bengals dominated throughout the early part of this decade.
Well, by dominate, you mean lose.
They were dominated in the games, but dominated the time slot.
Right. I think they started out with 3 years in a row, but the Texans have caught up to them.
And how dare you put the Bills as the early game? They are primetime darlings.
That is exactly where they should be.
Fifth winning season out of 6 for Bill O'Brien.
The de facto
and another division championship. It's not nothing. You know what I mean? It's like,
thanks,
good coach.
It's not nothing.
Good job for coming around on this.
David Caldwell, the Jaguars GM, is supposedly coming back. The Jaguars have 1 season with more than 5 wins in his 7 years in charge, and he's keeping his job.
That's amazing.
And yet Bill O'Brien, you know, I mean, they're winning the division.
All right. The Texans were not the only team that clinched the division on Saturday.
That's right.
Fourth and goal for the 15. The blitz is coming. Allen running for his life. Lofts it toward the back of the end zone. A man there, and it's knocked down. Incomplete. J.C. Jackson breaks it up in the corner of the end zone, knocking it away from Cole Beasley. And that should be enough to give the New England Patriots their 11th straight AFC East title.
Westwood won with the call. I don't know why, but that's what we have. The Patriots rule the AFC East for another year. Josh Allen marched the Bills inside the Patriots' 10 in the final minutes, but the New England defense held, securing a 24-17 win that clinches the division and keeps the Pats in line for their unprecedented 10th consecutive playoff bye.
Yes.
Maroon. Listen. Here's the thing. This is my takeaway from this game. If you're a Patriots fan, you finally have something to feel good about now as you get closer to January, because I thought this was a really good day for their offense, moving the ball on the ground. Sonny Michel really moved well, had nearly 100 yards. They had 143 in total. And that ability to keep the defense honest really, I thought, helped Brady, who was crisp and efficient and was accurate with his throws for the first time in some time, and this is not going to be a world-beating offense. But if you take this version of New England's offense and combine it with their defense, they absolutely, and you give them a short playoff field with a bye and home games, yes, this is a team that can get back to the Super Bowl if they play like this. Now, can they continue to string these games together? My concern is that they can, and they've hit on a recipe that they're going to ride hard here, because it's not particularly interesting, fun football to watch either. But that was my big takeaway on the New England side, that they had something here, and will they be able to replicate it as we go down into the playoffs?
Guys made plays for Brady. I know there was a lot more that went into it, and they certainly protected him pretty well against, you know, so-so pass rush of the Bills, but guys made plays for him. Burke had made a couple of nice plays. Edelman made contested catches. You know, he leads the NFL in drops. He made some tough catches. Jacoby Myers made a contested catch. Mohamed Sanu made a contested catch to keep a drive alive. N'Keal Harry did. It really felt to me like that was the number one thing watching this game was these guys are never that open. And in this game, Brady was more accurate, but more importantly, the receivers made catches with guys on them, and it just kind of kept them on the field, which is just going to make everything look a lot better. And it was, to me, easily their best game of the year on both, you know, overall.
I'm with you. I have to wonder if quietly Bill Belichick has enjoyed this coaching experience and what he's got out of all three phases. I mean, because it's special teams every week, and the defense is playing at magical levels at times. And I'm trying to think of another team that has had been so hamstrung on offense and found a way, opponent to opponent, to squeeze the life out of whoever they're playing and win in very weird, strange ways in some cases. I got way hooked into this emotionally because I felt myself just rooting.
Let me find that tweet.
Rooting hard for the Bills because I know what, they're so imperfect, but I love them, and I just wanted this city to experience a win over New England because
but you hate the Patriots. And their fans.
You know, but I know that's another thing is the Patriots. I've often
it's fine.
Like
it's
totally respected, but at one point in every season, I hit it. I hit that wall with the Patriots where I'm done with it, and then they'll pull me back.
Here's a tweet from Mark Sessler. The Patriots advance beyond quote dumbly annoying close quote to open quote, death ray ponderous, close quote, levels. They're soft-bellied fanatics, fanned and fed grapes as if they'd accomplished literally a particle of tangible progress in their own lives. Floating in soft ecstasy, Foxborough thicks, vicarious goons. And this led to some pushback.
I would say that's... That's fair.
Who came out? Do you get some Barstool goons? And
I stopped looking because it was
Local radio guys.
The full entree of New England, and it's fair. I mean, I put myself out there to be roundly abused by these people, and that's what's unfolding at the moment as we speak.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. My thoughts on the Bills is the same one that's kind of been holding for a while now. The Bills are good. It's their gift and it's their curse. And when you're good, you could beat terrible teams, and you get beat bad teams, you get beat mediocre teams, and probably more often than not, this Bills team could beat other good teams. But once that once you hit that next level, and I don't think the Patriots are a great team, but Greg, this is my scientific analysis,
this
they're a very good team. They just don't get it done, and we've seen that multiple times this season. Now, the positive of this is, one, you're going to the playoffs anyway, and that's going to be fun. Two, with two narrow losses to the Patriots this year, you know that this gap is not wide any longer, and it's something that you're trending in the right direction. It's something to build on next year, because everyone in the AFC East, the number one goal now entering the season is knocking the Patriots out of their division chair. And the Bills are closer than anybody else in that division right now. They're just not there yet, and I think that's what's going to haunt them when you get to January, when you play better than good teams. But there's nothing to be ashamed of. Anything they've done this season, good for them for hanging tight in this game.
We've been through almost 2 years, two seasons of Josh Allen, and I understand that he's often the problem there, but I don't get like this skepticism that he can't possibly develop into a good quarterback. He's been confused by the Patriots twice now, and I know that's no small thing, but in the fourth quarter when you throw out the game plan and ask the quarterback to win the game for you, and he didn't come through, but that drive was really impressive. When I watch his playing style and athletic ability, he's the closest I've seen to a young raw John Elway. He just has so much similarity to him as far as athletic ability, arm, ability to make plays when it breaks down, ability to drag the team down the field.
But nothing close in terms of accuracy.
Well, Greg, you didn't watch John Elway when he was young, and he was incredibly inaccurate, and he was just as raw as Josh Allen.
He had some hideous box scores back then. He was not a fantasy-type quarterback.
Look at his stats from early in his career.
The thing with
Allen made some great throws.
I thought the Patriots' defense played their normal game, a really good game. They didn't force a single turnover, so that's abnormal. But the Bills were in this game because Josh Allen had two just gorgeous throws, the touchdown at the end of the first half to Dawson Knox, which seemed like it would be a killer considering how well the Patriots had played that half to go in tied. And then the touchdown to John Brown where, you know, Brown ate up Stephon Gilmore and Devin McCourty. Those were unbelievable. And the fourth quarter drive was awesome too. The problem is, he also had layups that he missed throughout the first. He had some layups in the first half that just ended drives. It seems obvious, but the thing it took me a weird long time to realize is like every NFL quarterback is going to make completions if he's protected. Every single one. That's how good they are. But Josh Allen does not all the time. And so that like the fact that he doesn't fit into that bucket where I think, you know, even the Mark Sanchez's or whoever, they're going to complete passes when they're protected. Like that, it just worries me. But he obviously has a lot of other good qualities that makes up for it and puts them in this position.
And he's entertaining to watch.
Yes, he is.
He is. I don't know. This the way that game ended with Kyle Van Noy getting two straight pressures was to me kind of an undersung part of it. Is he beat their left tackle Deion Dawkins two straight times. He is their best pass rusher. He is their best player in the front seven. It was too bad he didn't make the Pro Bowl in my mind, but that was kind of a classic way.
Their pass rush sealed that game. They got him for the sack, Allen, and then it was basically a jailbreak, it looked like, in the last play of the game, leading to the incompletion. So
they have to beat the Dolphins next week. That is essentially a playoff-like game for them, whereas if they beat the Dolphins, then they advance to the divisional round.
I love their
You don't
chances.
See Brian Flores being involved in some pink pony stuff that allows New England to fly right through Miami? Like a brick through a piece of paper?
You got to convince Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Right, exactly. I mean, first of all, this Dolphins team hasn't laid down for anyone. But they did play once earlier in the year, and the Patriots
and Dolphins
won
spent
that game.
Plenty of time laying down to the Bengals towards the end of that game.
I was going to say, the same Dolphins that blew a 35-12 lead earlier today.
Hey, they won it.
Let's move back to Sunday.
Empty backfield. Jackson out of the shotgun. Wants to throw. Blitz pressure coming. Jackson hit. Lobs to the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Mark Andrews! Ad-lib to perfection from Jackson to Andrews. And the Ravens converts in the final minute of the opening half.
The hay will soon be in the barn. Jerry Sandusky, WBAL. Yes, Lamar Jackson threw three touchdown passes. Two to Mark Andrews late in the second quarter. And he ran for another 100 yards. Lamar Jackson, this is, if there was any doubt, this kind of removed it. He is the MVP, and you'll find out for sure in about a month. But, yes, the Ravens clinched the top seed in the AFC playoffs for the first time in their history with their 11th straight win, 31-15 over the Browns. Mark, Baltimore's offense took some time to get going, but there's an inevitability about this team. They just always get you in the end.
They do, and the reason I asked you to play that highlight was that it capped or was right sandwiched in between a sequence that went from the end of the first half early into the third that highlighted for me everything that's wrong with the Browns and everything that's right with the Ravens, where basically, all right, the Browns are up 6-0 and had done a really nice job on defense of making this a tough world for Lamar Jackson and the rest of the offense. And they had another Mark Ingram fumble, which happened the first time they beat Baltimore. Things were going their way, and their offense, you know, has issues, Cleveland. But they basically, so the Ravens go on what is a very quick two-play, 63-yard touchdown march, all right? Takes about a minute. The Browns.
Quite a march.
It's, I don't know if that's a march or just like basically just threw a rope for a touchdown. The Browns get the ball back and they're down 7-6. You've got to find a way to get out of that half before, just stop the bleeding. Get out of that half because you're kicking off to Baltimore. So what did they do? They fire off a string of passes. They're three and out and their drive takes 23 seconds. You give the ball right back to Baltimore on a short field and that just happened, the highlight. So suddenly it's 14-6. You come out of half, you kick the ball back to Baltimore. They rip down the field on 13 plays, 69 yards, taking up 8 minutes nearly of the third
quarter. That's a march.
Right? That's a march. And they're up 21-6, and you know the game is over. And the game is over because they are well coached. They understand situational awareness. They understand how to deal with the final 2 or 3 minutes of a half and maximize it and use it in a way that destroys their opponent. And Cleveland is absolutely the opposite end of the spectrum. They looked lost, completely lost. You have, by the end of this game, Odell Beckham screaming at Freddie Kitchens on the sideline. Now, they said later, because this was the Browns climbed back in and went for an early two-point conversion when they would have needed another touchdown to tie. And, you know, you got Baker Mayfield throwing to Ricky Seals-Jones, where Odell Beckham is basically the Tony Romo thought he was annoyed at Freddie Kitchens for saying, why isn't the ball obviously going to me? Why is not the whole play on our season is on the line with a very, you know, very little oxygen left, and we're throwing to Ricky Seals-Jones. And, after the game, Freddie Kitchens said, no, it was Odell upset about the Ravens and the way the Ravens were, you know, playing physical with him. I just don't know what I buy at this point, because every game to me is a reflection of a coaching staff and an organization that spent the whole year, cannot get out of their own way, and today was against your mortal enemy, the Baltimore Ravens, the team ripped from you, and the team that's gone on to have the success that you should have if you were a functional organization. The Browns cannot make it happen, and it was one of the more depressing losses, and you have to... It is inexcusable.
Listen how upset Mark is,
everybody.
Well,
it is inexcusable at this point.
For 15 weeks, Mark, in what has been, since I've known him, the most disappointing Browns season, given how exciting everything was heading into it, Mark, for 15 weeks, was in pretty good shape in the newsroom. Did not really get upset, did not get very annoyed, kind of viewed it as in its own level of inevitability. But for some reason, this game is the one that got you, triggered you.
My apathy is helping me.
Maybe not.
The storm was so quiet as if to be non-existent for 15 weeks, but today,
brewing,
the quiet storm raged.
Well, they've squeezed, and Browns fans, I'm sure at this point are just, they find new ways to author terrible seasons, and this just is, any team where you don't add up to the talent of your roster, we talk about it with the Cowboys, it's just inexcusable. And, you know, by all accounts, we met with Freddie Kitchens. I like the guy. He seems like a good guy. It's not a personal thing, but I don't know how you argue that you bring the staff back for next season. There's just no way. And it's another one-and-done scenario. It's embarrassing, but you have to hope you can get someone in here that can work with this locker room.
Mark Ingram left this game with an injury of some kind. Is it anything to worry about?
At one point, he was hurt. Lamar Jackson was hobbling around. Mark Andrews was hobbling around. And they need rest. I don't know what
it's
the deal
calf
is with
injury. It. And Adam Schefter reported it's a strain.
Right. And there are no structural issues or anything like that. So it sounds like you might not see him next week when they play the Steelers.
Right. And then that's 3 weeks off for them, which is tricky. But they're wrapping up, you know, one of the great regular seasons of the last 20, 30 years. That's how good this Ravens team is. I'm not surprised that the Ravens defense kind of choked out this Browns offense eventually, because that's what's changed the most most since they met in week four. I'm just like amazed looking at Lamar Jackson going over 100 yards again rushing. It's not even a big deal anymore. That he ran for 176 times this year for over 1,200 yards, averaging, you know, almost 7 yards per carry. Assuming he threw for 36 touchdowns too, by the way. I know we're just like used to it at this point, but to think of if anyone had thought that this was possible in August, even his biggest fans, like that Lamar Jackson of all these guys who was drafted last year.
Or the
year,
Making the Leap author.
Right. MVP and MVP playing football. And it's just
remarkable.
Like, I don't know. It's amazing.
In the time we've done this podcast, we've had some really incredible individual seasons, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Adrian Peterson, Patrick Mahomes last year. But this one just feels unique. It's like we've never seen anything like this.
And it's the way the whole organization bought into this, you know, when the entire rest of the NFL doubted that it could be done. That it was, oh, it's a nice 5 or 6 game stretch last year, and then they were figured out in the playoffs, and it's not going to work. And it's like, no, everyone's wrong.
Plus, yeah, that playoff loss where he looked, you know, so exposed for 3.5 quarters, that was the last time we saw him before this happened. It's just remarkable what he's turned into in such a fast, expedient manner.
And it's a team, he's the key, and they built it all around him. But it is, like, his success in the MVP is a team thing, because he wouldn't be able to only throw the ball 25 times or less in every game since week 6 unless their defense was playing that well, unless every, you know, the offensive line. I mean, he's the key that makes them all look better, and that's why he's the MVP. But it's pretty remarkable that they've been able to keep with that formula every single week.
I think Baltimore is an underrated place to have to go play, and they have home field advantage. I just don't know who's going to take him out at this point. We will see.
All right,
Greg, would you care to guess whether John Harbaugh is going to play RG3 for at least three quarters next week?
I think he's going to play him maybe the whole game, because Garofalo did indicate earlier this week that they would probably sit Lamar Jackson. So I wouldn't be surprised if RG3 starts, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Ravens backups are at least, you know, you can't sit everyone. I wouldn't be surprised if the Ravens backups beat the Steelers. We saw it in 2004. I remember when the Steelers backups.
I mean, it's the Steelers backups mostly too, but yeah.
Right. Partly what I mean. Like, I think the Ravens backups with RG3 can have a good chance to beat Duck Hodges and whoever the Steelers are lining up. I wouldn't say that that's just a game that you chalk up. I just remember so distinctly that 2004 Steelers team, which was great, who had the one seed, sat everyone. They played Willie Parker and their backups in week 17. Bills fans got knocked out of the playoffs with a home game, thinking that they're going to beat their backups. I don't know. This Ravens organization is special.
The only thing I'd say is whenever RG3's been in there, I mean, that offense falls into unwatchable territories.
What does it matter?
No, it doesn't.
It won't
win or lose. I'm just saying.
It'll matter for the Steelers. Yeah.
All right. Look, we're going to get to the Steelers in a second, but there was another upset to dig into, this in the NFC.
Three receivers in the game. Shotgun snap. Hundley's going to throw. Looking to his left, in trouble, gets hit, breaks out of there, rolling right to the 20, to the 15, cuts back to the left of the 10, he's at the 5, and he's got the first down as he dives to the 3-yard line.
Oh my goodness, Brett Hundley was sacked. I mean, you literally had a Seahawk with his arms around his waist in the pocket, and somehow he got out of that, and then an incredible run by 7.
Oh man, I want Ron Wolfe at Thanksgiving dinner next year. Christmas dinner, New Year's Eve.
Simply invite him. I'm sure he would do that for you.
Ron Wolfe and Dave Pasch on the play-by-play for the Cardinals Radio Network. Yes, Brett Hundley. You remember him. He replaced an injured Kyler Murray, and he gave the Seahawks fits on defense, making big plays to close out a rather surprising 27-13 upset win over the Seahawks in the clink. Greg, the Seahawks can still win the NFC West with a win next week against the Niners. But, you know, this loss and some crushing injury news kind of puts their whole season in a different category now.
No team had a worse day. They lost Dwayne Brown, you know, before the game even started, and it turns out he's going to need a knee surgery. That's their left tackle. Mike Iapati, their guard, went in and out of this game, missed most of the first half. Chris Carson is expected to miss the rest of the season after suffering a hip injury. C.J. Procise, who came in as Carson's backup, also got hurt and will be out for week 17.
Rashad Penny, of course, already out.
Broke his arm. And who's the defensive player that I'm now forgetting got hurt? We'll get back
to that
later.
Doesn't even matter.
Jadeveon Clowney didn't play in this game, and maybe he'll return, and that'll help. And they could have used him because even before all these injuries kept cascading, the Seahawks defense had no – What, you're always
no, I love
Clowney.
No, Dan has some relative. So him and Jadeveon Clowney, although you met each other once and you interviewed him.
No, I have no problem with him, but it is remarkable.
Like
this guy,
on the planet, but.
This guy, for all the talking points, is never on the field.
Well, factually, that's totally wrong until this year. He played a higher percentage of snaps over the last 3 years than literally almost any lineman
in
the league.
Check your math.
This year, he's always playing through.
Don't get in the way of our muckraking journalism.
Exactly. This year, he's definitely been off and on, and that has hurt them big time. It's remarkable, and yet not totally shocking to see their defense struggle against the Cardinals. The bigger surprise was that Russell Wilson could not come up with anything offensively throughout the entire day. Even before these injuries were happening, they had a first drive touchdown, and then after that, they couldn't get anything going.
I mean, you looked at this. DK Metcalf targeted once, a drop, and that was it. And then Tyler Lockett, a guy we were just singing the praises of heading into this game because he was healthy and making plays again. He shows up in this game, and he finishes with one catch for 12 yards on 8 targets. This is not what we expected ever from the Seahawks offense. And I know this doesn't, as I laid out at the top of this, this does not end their season, this loss, but it's just something seemed very wrong with the Seahawks.
How many people out there lost their fantasy championships today and probably maybe didn't get there because of what's happened to Chris Carson? And then how many won because they had Kenyon Drake, who has 6 touchdowns in 2 weeks and went off for 166 yards today, turning David Johnson once again into a raging afterthought?
2 carries for 3 yards for David Johnson, who was once viewed as like the future of the position.
And the Kenyon Drake's a free agent, so they have to decide whether to pay him and cut David Johnson or pay both or what's going on.
Well, they're
going to
cut. They're definitely cutting direction. David Johnson. And they did say they want to sign Drake. His price tag went up, but he fits that offense. I give Cliff Kingsbury so much credit, and it was almost fitting that his best moment as a coach, a rookie coach, was with Brett Hundley on the field running plays. The fact that they were able to still have a decent running game, and some of it was just improvised Hundley scrambling, but some of it was Kenyon Drake's runs that were very creative, that even with Hundley at quarterback, they were able to move the ball. The Seahawks did come back. You know, they were down 20-7. They cut it to 20-13. It's 10 minutes left. The clink is going crazy, and you think, okay, they're going to come back and win this game. That's what they do. And then the Hundley-led Cardinals go on a 9-play, 78-yard, 5.5-minute touchdown drive to end the game. That was the most surprising thing I saw all day.
Chandler Jones, 4 sacks, 2 forced fumbles.
Oof.
Now joins Robert Mathis as the only players in history with 19 sacks and 8 forced fumbles in a season. That includes guys like Deacon Jones before the sack was invented per Pro Football Journal, which has researched all those guys.
Wow, good from the Pro 50s. Football Journal.
Yeah,
from
that, they're busy over there.
He's got to be in the
1982
Defensive Player of the
tracking.
Year, too.
Okay, and I get that. He's been one of the most underrated guys. He should probably be an All-Pro. But take a game like today, going against the backup left tackle, Jamarco Jones.
Yeah.
I want to see you do it against the best left tackle in the league.
Here's one thing I love about Chandler Jones. One of those forced fumbles was him running 17 yards down the field to knock the ball out of David Moore. And that was one of the things I loved watching him when he was on the Patriots. He is just a man on fire every play in terms of his hustle. And that's sometimes why he gets these like cleanup coverage sacks. So credit to him. But I do want to quickly mention how poor Pete Carroll handled this game. In my mind, it was just
it was a
Pete Carroll game. Seahawks fans know what I'm talking about.
He's been waiting all season for this, folks.
No, I've done it a couple
thrown
times.
Thrown out of Seahawks corner. Now it's his turn to get revenge.
All right, third and one. Russell Wilson throws the ball deep. He's at around the 40. I think past the 40-yard line early in the game. He ends up throwing it deep, taking a shot on third and one. He said after the game, it's because he assumed they were going to go for it on fourth and one. But nope, he's got Pete Carroll as his coach. He should know better. Not only did they not go for it, they punted the ball instead of attempting a 51-yard field goal. Later in the game, Jason Myers, the same kicker, hit a 52-yarder with room to spare to that same end.
That's fair, dog.
In the fourth quarter, they had a fourth and three, I believe, in the red zone where they decide to kick a field goal to make it 20-10. So they're trying to catch up with field goals instead of going for it on fourth down. And then there's also a 3rd and 3 before one of these field goals where you hand it off to Travis Homer.
That's the one that got me. 4th-string running back.
You're on your 4th-string running back, and you're still trying to establish the run. And look, their offensive line can't protect Russell Wilson, so it's kind of your damned if you do, damned if you don't. But give Russ a chance.
All right. That's fair. You feel better?
Oh, yeah. That was good.
And Chandler Jones, 19 sacks. The record, quote-unquote, 22.5. Michael Strahan, give that record its dignity back. It was stolen when Brett Favre slid at Michael Strahan's feet on the final game of the 2001 season. A disgrace.
Well,
taking it away from Jets great Mark Gastineau. Now give it its dignity back. And what does he need? 19, somebody to do the math. Another game like today. Game like today.
That's against Jared Goff and the Rams, whose offensive line is not exactly a shining star.
Get that record its dignity back, Chandler Jones.
The further we get away from the Brett Favre, it's really funny he did that if you think about it.
I mean, that is
like that he liked Strahan that much, and that he was just like collegial enough.
So much revisionist history here. Isn't it a bootleg? He turns around and Strahan's in his face, so he decides to take a plunge.
No, it was late in the game, and the Packers, I believe, had it sewed away, and it was pretty clear that they set it up.
Favre said it himself.
So yeah,
basically said, "I'm going to roll this way and set it up because they're winning."
He's admitted that.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a disgrace what happened. All right.
Kyler Murray, I didn't even mention, in a hamstring injury. He made a couple of good plays before he left, but you would think, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
He hurt his hamstring.
And who's starting at running back for the Seahawks in the biggest game of the season?
Travis Homer?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Dan, would your ire run as deep if they were not Mark Gastineau's record, who was the Jets?
It bothers me a little bit. My franchise has nothing.
Kristen Michael on speed dial.
Oh! Yeah! Or
well, they
Trent
just,
Richardson, Mark.
Well, they also just worked out Robert Turbin last week, so
great.
You never know.
All right, the other big upset on Sunday.
4th and 7. Hodges in the shotgun, 3 receivers. Jets bring an all-out blitz. He fumbles the snap. Hurls one up the middle of the field. And it's incomplete. He missed Juju Smith-Schuster. Greg Williams brought the house. And the Jets get the stop on downs. And it will be victory formation for New York.
Yeah, Bob Wish, Schusen with the call. The Jets Radio Network. The Steelers, they're not taking care of their own business. Pittsburgh's path to the playoffs got a lot murkier after a 16-10 loss to the Jets at the Meadowlands. This was a game that featured a Duck Hodges benching, a Mason Rudolph injury, a Duck Hodges return, but no Steelers magic on offense. It's a trend, Wes, in these all-important December games. What has changed for this Pittsburgh offense from where they were 3 weeks ago when everybody was feeling good to where they are now?
I think luck. Like, Duck Hodges was always a little over his head that he wasn't good enough to be playing.
I mean, he was your boy, though.
No, anyone who wasn't Mason Rudolph was my boy. I think this is being way misrepresented.
Grass is always greener.
Every time I talked about Duck Hodges, I said he has obvious limitations, doesn't have an NFL arm, and is an undrafted free agent rookie.
Well, you said he was clearly, the best quarterback is sitting on the bench. And unfortunately, this was the last 2 weeks have been a Mason Rudolph, like performances. I mean, 17 throws for 84 yards and 2 picks in this game for Hodges.
Well, there was an 8 possession sequence from the end of last game through the beginning of this game where he threw 5 interceptions and had 3 and outs, and there went the Steelers' season. They have gone 7-3 in their last 10 games, and in 3 losses, they've averaged 9 points.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, to Hodges' credit, he threw 2 early picks, which led to the benching. He comes in on that last drive. He throws a pretty nice ball to James Washington in the end zone on 3rd down. And Marcus May, who had a nice game for the Jets, did a really nice job in one-on-one coverage. Because Greg Williams, he was aggressive. He went after him twice in a row. And then on 4th down, a snap that he drops. It wasn't a great snap, but Hodges probably should have caught it on a fly. But he recovered enough to give Juju Smith-Schuster a chance. And this just has not been Juju's year. He didn't even really come close to it. But so Hodges didn't totally flame out in the last possession like he did the previous week. But at the same time, Wes, and you talked about this downstairs earlier, it's just another reminder the Steelers are paying for their sins of never finding a real capable person to put behind Big Ben.
Well, every team whiffs on some guys, but whereas the Patriots find a Jimmy Garoppolo and a Jacoby Brissett, the Steelers have had Landry Jones, Josh Dobbs, who they traded away, Mason Rudolph, who flamed out, and they had to turn. I mean, how many times have you ever seen a playoff contender play an undrafted rookie at quarterback?
No, but they loved Mason Rudolph in the – you couldn't see him in real games, but the reports on him – whether the coaching staff was smitten with his, you know, traits and abilities, and then you get him in real live games, and you realize, and like we are a week away of very possibly having an 8-8 team in the AFC make the playoffs, and yeah. There are put the Steelers in that flock of clubs that have to look back on a game like today and a series of games that just like could any of these teams get hot and get and make it happen? I mean, this is there's an absurd scenario happening at the end,
right? I think if you're the Chiefs, who at least right now are holding the 3 seed, you look at the differences in danger compared between Tennessee and anyone else that could get the 6 seed, which at this point is just Pittsburgh and Oakland, who will get to. And to me, the Titans are a very dangerous team if they get in as the 6 seed, and right now they are in position to do that, whereas Pittsburgh and certainly Oakland would be a lot less.
Well, and Dan, you talked about how Duck didn't. He didn't do so badly on that final drive, but after they put him back in, and even before they put him back in, he played scared too much in this game.
That's fair.
Dan,
he got rid of the ball too quickly. He was afraid of pressure. He played scared.
I saw your tweet, and it reminds me just of basically everything happening in Cleveland, where there was the report that the locker room is down on Gase for what his tough guy act, and that they've been responding more to Greg Williams. And I feel like, you know, there were predictions that the two of them could butt heads. Not that they are, but does it change the way? I mean, are we?
I was just going to say my point. I was going to make before we moved on was that Adam Gase is a profoundly unpopular figure among Jets fans and perhaps inside his own building. But to his credit, after that 1-7 start, they have a chance to go 7-9 if they win on Sunday, and that is nothing to celebrate. But that tells you that this team never quit on Gase, despite all the, you know, setbacks and disappointment and injuries and some of the offensive play calling, which has not been good, and it wasn't good in this game either after an early touchdown. And I just want to throw one thing out there. Greg Williams, when you talk about assistant coach of the year discussions, he's not going to get it. Nobody's ever going to give Greg Williams any trophy. However, what he's been able to do, he's turned that Jets defense into a top 10 unit, and the number of injuries that group has had and the lack of talent, what he's been able to scheme his way to, really deserves some credit. Whether you like the guy or not, the Jets' defense has been good this year. And no, I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go.
That feels rich.
We don't get on in New York City for it. But, and I don't know if he's going to be back either because, you know, he's a guy that burns out quickly behind the scenes as well. But he gets credit for that.
TJ Watt, big force fumble in this game.
Yeah.
Maybe helps his defensive player of the year case. And then Mike Tomlin, who I never bought that he should have been in the coach of the year race, but that's definitely over after the last 2 years.
You didn't buy that?
If TJ
no,
Watt,
not compared to John Harbaugh. To me,
I mean, in the race, there could be 12 people.
Right, but as like in what
Mark,
way
just
could
deal
he
with it.
Possibly?
The Ravens head coach is getting head coach. Of the
well,
year.
You know, I'm on board with that at this point. So.
If not for that TJ Watt strip sack, the Steelers probably finished the game with 3 points instead of 10.
That's fair. That's fair, dog. All right. Speaking of the Raiders,
can take this opening drive in the second half into the end zone.
I love getting Musburger on the show.
Rush back, cuts, hits end zone, touchdown, Raiders. Opening drive, third quarter, staying alive. That's the theme today. And the Raiders are staying alive so far. All four of the things that had to happen today happened. And now the Raiders win this, and they'll go to Denver with a chance to be the sixth seed in the AFC.
Hey, Wes, it's true. You can't say that's not accurate. Brent Musburger, KCBS. Wes, before the show, was on fire that people are plugged in on this Raiders' chances of making the playoffs.
Man, what did Saturday teach us? You want good teams because you'll get good football. You guys keep rooting for bad teams.
I'm not rooting for it.
Rooting.
I mean, it was Greg and I were discussing
you're
it at length, so we
rooting
we
for
clearly
it. You're
annoyed
delighted
less.
By the Raiders.
Whoever does get that playoff spot is they're not long for this world regardless. But anyway, Oakland Raiders, they keep their playoff hopes alive, 24-17 over the Chargers in front of a sea of silver and black at Dignity Health Sports Park. Ugh. What a mess, the whole situation. Chargers going with a silent count on offense because the road fans were so loud. Mark, this stat from the great Neil Reynolds of Sky Sports over in London. Entering Sunday, the Raiders had a 1-200 chance of making the playoffs. They'll wake up Monday with a 1-8 shot in Week 17.
Well, I understand Wes's point that rooting for a team like this.
Just pointing out that statistically they made a huge jump in terms of playing.
I like things football. Like this in sports.
How do you not win the Jaguars game?
Oh! Well, it makes last week's inexcusable loss even tougher to fathom.
Right, they would be tied right now at 8-7 with the Steelers and the Titans.
It's crazy. Unbelievable, and because this was as much of a home game as that was, and the broadcast crew pointed out they were there because you can't tell on TV. It seems like there's a lot of Raiders fans. They put it at like 95%. Noise level and support level for the Raiders, which is, you know, we can get to that in a second. But the reason I picked that capping touchdown right there was that this game felt to me, and I mentioned to you guys a couple times, utterly formless. And I was like struggling to find anything from it that was even vaguely relevant. But then the Raiders, they're up 14-7 and looking very Raiders-ish, and the Chargers have already gone to sleep. I don't know what is happening with them. But they are up 14-7 and put together an effective 9-minute drive that did two things. I thought it tired out the Los Angeles defense, and they never really were the same after that. And basically just challenged Phillip Rivers, who spent the entire game with his right thumb taped up. And, you know, he was not in a good place. He had a glove on his other hand just to even be able to protect the ball well. And, you know, that Chargers game from a couple weeks ago where Rivers was on fire and jawing at people and it was the Jaguars, it makes that seem even the more ridiculous because 2 weeks in a row they've not gotten the job done. I don't know what to say about Oakland. I mean, they just have no weapons at all, and they don't have Josh Jacobs right now. And it's a little bit of Hunter Renfro. It's a little bit of Darren Waller.
A lot of Hunter Renfro, who,
today,
to Greg's chagrin, he is the Jenga piece of that offense. He's the guy that keeps everything together in that passing attack. He goes over 100 yards. He is the evolutionary Wayne Krabet, and everybody knows it.
Well, okay. I mean, I'll side with you on that one.
I'll take the L. Renfro has come along well. It's been one of the best 490-yard seasons we've seen in a while.
Well, it's all they have. But I just cannot imagine what is going to happen to this Chargers team. And you know, it's not something that the NFL wants people to talk about and complain about. But when you put them into an 70,000 whatever seat stadium, what is going to be the optics?
The silent snap count at home. Well,
it's not fair to these players.
Indignity.
It's a huge disadvantage to the organization, but it's one that they created, that the Chargers created. I did want to mention this article that cracked me up from our old friend Gilbert Manzano. Remember? And he was asking
NFL
some
media
of the Chargers players if they knew the name of the stadium they played in. And they didn't, you know, many of them did not. Austin Eckler guessed it was Divinity Health Field, which is not it. Some of them call it the Dig, which I didn't know about, but this is it. It was the StubHub. It turned into Dignity.
I mean, today was the Oakland Coliseum.
And this was it. And so it was a 3 years of.
I'm sure they don't have fond memories.
The key was, the players all said, we are ready to get out of here.
Yeah. Yep.
These corporate name stadiums change their name every year. I can't blame players for not keeping up with it.
Let's move on.
Third and goal at the 3. Jones with a shotgun. Barkley to his right. He calls out signals. Takes the snap. He's back to throw. Fires one right. Touchdown, Giants. Peyton Smith. And they win it in overtime. Second touchdown catch for Smith. Jones' fifth touchdown pass of the ball game. And the Giants win it in overtime. 41-35.
Bob Papa, WFAN. Yes, Daniel Jones threw for 352 yards and a career-high 5 touchdown passes, including that game winner in OT, lifting those Giants. The G-Man, 41-35 over the Skins. Jones, he wasn't the only young Giants star on shining display. Saquon Barkley set a franchise record, gentlemen. I mean, this is a decorated franchise with 279 yards from scrimmage, 2 long touchdowns. It was a Davey Gettleman fever dream. And that's the thing that my takeaway from the Giants at this age, that they have so much work to do, and it's been a terrible season, and it's been a run of bad football for this team for the most part, outside of one largely forgettable, who's the head coach with the really bad hair?
Ray Hanley?
No. They went 11-5 or 10-6.
McAdoo.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the best.
Why did I dial that back 25? He had like a comb over.
Ben McAdoo.
I mean, he's the best Giants coach of the decade, including Tom Coughlin. God.
All right, great. You lost twice. You got beat twice.
Actually, that
you
was
gotta let
decade.
It go.
Yeah, that was this
Tom Coughlin.
42-46 is never going away, Greg. Anyway, they have so much work to do, the Giants, and Dave Gettleman doesn't deserve a parade because a lot of his moves haven't worked out. But there are worse places to be in than to have a high draft pick, and I don't know the salary cap situation, but to have Daniel Jones, and this is not his first game this season where he's piled up these monster stats.
Five touchdowns.
I meant to go back and check it out. According to Gil Brandt on Twitter, Jones is the only rookie since at least 1950 with 350-plus passing yards, 5-plus passing TDs, and 0 interceptions in a game. And Barkley, this is the performance you expected more of these type of games, but it's just a reminder of how incredibly talented he is. He is the type of guy that you could get on his back and he'll take you to the Super Bowl if you have the right team around him. So as far as the Giants go, they have so much work to do, but they have two potential big pieces. Barkley, we know, he's already a superstar. But Jones has shown certainly enough in his rookie year to make you think they have a guy that they can really build around.
I found it interesting, this report, that when Dwayne Haskins went out with an ankle injury, that Redskins owner Daniel Snyder told him not to come back in the game.
Haskins clarified after the game that the doctor told him not to. And then the owner basically said, listen to the doctor. You know.
Oh, well, that feels less controversial.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way it was spun after the game.
Yeah,
Redskins.
I mean, the initial report was curious. So,
that's what Haskins told the media, and then a Redskins spokesman came out immediately. He's like, no, that's not how it played out.
Case Keenum came in and almost led them to victory, but because the Redskins defense was so bad and lost it in overtime, you got the Redskins with the number 2 pick in the draft, which in this draft, especially with Chase Young sitting out there, is very advantageous. They just need to lose once more.
Yeah. In fact, I was kind of blown away that after Case Keenum led the Redskins on a 99-yard touchdown drive to pull them within 1 point and with 29 seconds to play, they opted to kick the extra point and play for overtime. It's like, what are we doing here? The move is to go for 2 there. You either win or lose. And by the way, wink, wink, throw it over the crossbar and let's get to town with Chase Young. But anyway, he kicked the extra point and Daniel Jones did the rest. I set up all that Gettleman stuff and it was just silence in the room because nobody likes to talk about Dave Gettleman.
No. I was waiting for someone else. Fun.
Every time one side says, look at the scoreboard, the other side looks dumb for a month.
I would like to have a parade for him. That would be fun. It hasn't gone well
and they now, they're set up for the number 4 pick. It looks like they'll stay ahead of Miami next week as well in terms of strength of schedule. So if they don't win, they're at number 4.
But I'm not crazy. Jones has had – he's stacked together. I know he's had bad games too.
He's had some big games on banged-up fantasy teams. It's been up and down, but there's definitely been those big-time moments. I mean, this game had 28 points before there was an incompletion. The running games and Haskins and him were going back and forth.
If Baker or Darnold threw 5 touchdowns and 0 picks in the game, we would be running around the building with no clothes on.
And the whole thing
just saying, it would be treated differently.
Wouldn't it be great? And the whole thing with going back into the game and the owner, that you could lay that out and put team X and everyone would say, oh, we know what team was responsible for the shenanigans or this controversy.
Yep.
And that's a problem there. All right, let's move on.
Straight I formation, slot right. They hand it off, Philip Lindsay straight ahead, and Littens is loose, 20-15. Lindsay inside the 10, high steps inside the 5, touchdown Denver! Philip Lindsay, his 7th rushing touchdown of the year. That's a scamper of 27 yards, and it extends the Broncos' lead to 26-17 with 6:39 left.
Dave Logan with the call. That was the final score of the game. Philip Lindsay seals it with that touchdown. And Drew Lock delivered another promising performance. The Broncos 27-17 over the Browns, or the Lions, excuse me, who have now dropped 8 straight. Wes, you picked this game for the grass field the men would play on. Did you get anything else out of it?
Lindsay looks good. Drew Lock, you can't really take a whole lot out of this one. It was mostly the Philip Lindsay show. He did lead an impressive drive where he threw the ball to Deshaun Hamilton, who might have had the best game of his career. I was just wondering a week or two ago if this guy just isn't very good and will never be a starting caliber receiver for the Broncos, but he had a pretty good game today. Locke was good, and the Lions had their first lead of December for a while. I mean, that's saying something. They had a Jamal Agnew return punt return for a touchdown, and Kenny Galladay played well, as he always does. And Blau shrunk against pass pressure, as he usually does.
Now, wait a minute.
Wes knows what he's talking about.
All right, but I'll have to go check out this game extensively myself later this week.
Well, I mean, very nature of your club, you have to stick with the quarterback.
Well, thank you. I did notice that the Blauhards, who support David Blau, along with the Bohemians, who are Bo Scarborough fans, those two players combined, and one of them is a quarterback, for 151 total yards. So we're going to
go Bohemian culture.
Yeah, we're going to go through some tough stretches supporting these guys. But if you think that we're going to jump ship at some point,
I think the Lions are going to jump ship.
Well, David Blau will do something in his life. We will report on him no matter what he's doing, whether it's on the field or not.
Anything
David
else?
Blau should run a plow.
Anything else?
Lions up to the number three pick. Kind of snuck in there.
Yeah.
If the Redskins mess around and beat the Redskins next week.
You know, like a 9-game losing streak to end your season. That could really do wonders.
Undoubtedly, Bob Quinn will do the right thing with that that draft slot.
Let's move on.
Move on.
Freeman in the backfield. Jacksonville brings four. Quick throw. That's Freeman. The catch. Touchdown, Atlanta. Caught it at the two and then just kind of backed his way into the end zone. He took Jerod Wilson and Trey Herndon with him. So Devontae Freeman on the board, on the ground and through the air. And it's 13-0 Atlanta.
Wes Durham of the Falcons Radio Network. Devonta Freeman scored two touchdowns before the Jacksonville Jaguars even took a snap. And that was enough. The Falcons beat the Jaguars 24-12 in a matchup between two teams thinking about whether they want to fire their head coaches. Yep, the hot butt bowl. So this would be another positive Sunday on the Save Dan Quinn front because they have a chance after a 1-7 start to finish the second half of the season 6-2. And that's the type of stuff that makes ownership think twice. Unless, of course, Arthur Blank already decided at 1-7 that he wanted to hit the reset button. We'll find out soon enough. And a couple things. We get the report from Ian Rappaport this weekend. Same thing. Let's hold off on this stuff. That Doug Marrone, after the Tom Coughlin firing, might actually be safe. And he might continue on in 2020 as the head coach.
Along with David Caldwell.
With David Caldwell, the GM, although Tony Khan, who we've met, very nice man, he can end up having a greater role potentially in the decision-making of the team. And then you go out and the Jaguars, you know, lay another egg in a game that 24-12 was kind. It wasn't even that entertaining. Your boy Minshew did nothing until the very end of the game.
He had 19 yards passing, like with minutes to go in the second quarter.
I know, but he's your guy, so I don't know. and I want to focus on Julio Jones before we move on because, Wes, you made a good point when we were in our conversation about the all-decade team he flies under the radar a little bit how great this man has been. On Sunday, Julio Jones had his 55th career 100-yard receiving day. That is the most among active players, the fourth most all-time. And if he manages 84 yards next week, he'll tie Jerry Rice, yes, Jerry Rice, for the most 1,400-yard seasons at receiver.
Juicy.
And also, Julio's going to do it 6 years in a row if he does it.
6 years in a row. And keep in mind, Jones is still just 30 years old. It's been remarkable what he and Matt Ryan have done together. Yes, they blew the Super Bowl, but it's not all about that. What these two guys have done as a tandem. Oh, by the way, Julio Jones didn't blow the Super Bowl.
No, yeah.
He made the catch that should have locked up the Super Bowl against the Patriots, but that's a different conversation. This is a tremendous player. We get to watch greatness every Sunday, even if the Falcons aren't very good.
Left-footed kicker gets this one away. A high spiraling kick. He turned it over. Backing up Nyheim Hines inside his 20. Now near side numbers. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45 down the near sideline. Has the punter to beat. Near side, he's at the 30. He's at the 20. He's going to go. Nyheim Hines, a punt return for a touchdown. Nyheim Hines takes it all the way back, and the Colts lead it 13-0.
Matt Taylor, Colts Radio Network of the call. Nyheim Hines became the first NFL player in 7 years to score two punt returns in the same game. And he set up another touchdown with a long return early in the game. I mean, it's like one of the, Greg, 38-6 win for the Colts over the Panthers. This is one of the best special teams performances in NFL history based on what I'm seeing here.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know what you're going to see when you sign up for Colts-Panthers in Week 16, but you got one of the great punt return performances. It was only three returns. One was for 40 yards, which set up their first touchdown, and then their next The next two was an 84-yard touchdown, which we heard, and the 71-yard touchdown return in the fourth quarter was even more electric. It wasn't just the blocking. It was him making guys miss. It just made me wonder, like, why was Nyheim Hines not the punt returner till this week?
You got to get Bones Fossil in Carolina as their next head coach.
Let's put this in perspective. There's only six guys who have more punt return yards all season than Nyheim Hines had on Sunday.
Right. We're in an NFL where this isn't happening anymore, and it's essentially Eric Metcalfe.
Is it too late to make the Colts the team of around the NFL?
Yes, right. A little bit.
Yeah. So he set it up. There wasn't too much else. I know our friend Spice Rack had a lot of hopes, hopefully just hopes, pinned on Will Greer today. And
based on the text, that felt like a lot was on the line.
Well, he was 0-for-7 with three interceptions on deep passes today, and we were told to watch for deep passes.
His first throw was like 50 yards down the field. It was pretty well covered.
Sorry, Spice,
incomplete. Two of those interceptions were in the last 3 minutes of the game, so sometimes garbage time goes wrong, you know. But he didn't really make any plays that made you excited.
I thought it was interesting.
When garbage time goes wrong,
Ian reported that the Colts will take a long look at the quarterback position and would be open to drafting someone, and that they're just, you know.
Of course. I mean, well, not
well,
of course.
I mean, we were debating that on Thursday, but I think you have to at this point.
I think the thing is, will they go after like a veteran? Because you could get out of his contract easily enough. Jacoby Brissett, that is, who did not play well today. I mean, he didn't look any better than Will Greer.
Has anybody's stock gone lower in the last 8 weeks than Jacoby Brissett?
You know,
relative to where he was before?
Is playing in theory through an injury, but he's just so inaccurate. All his balls, his passes are sailing. They somehow scored 38 points with him completing 14-27 for 119 yards.
Whoa.
You have Nyheim Hines and a rugged running game racked up over a couple hundred yards. You know, you're going to do it.
Panthers, just wait for that offseason vacation at this point.
Well, the Colts have a playoff chance, right, Greg?
No, they're done? They are
no
done.
Path.
But I'm glad you said this just to, so that I can...
How magnanimous of you are.
But they are...
They are a factor in a playoff scenario, Wes.
Berserker.
Because here's what they can do. We forgot to mention with the Raiders. We should at least spell it out what needs to happen. The Colts are involved. And the Colts, if they win at Jacksonville, Wes, next Sunday, they could be part of a four-way 8-8 tie that would send the Raiders to the playoffs because they would win that four-way tie. For that to happen, not only do the Colts have to win, the Steelers have to lose at the Ravens.
Not impossible.
The Titans have to lose.
I can't believe you have another game
at the Texans.
Not impossible.
And the Raiders have to win in Denver, and that would send them to the playoffs. And they just need some help from Nyheim Hines and a few other teams.
And Spice Rack, nobody has any idea where you are anymore, but wherever you are, Merry Christmas.
Greer bounced back. This was just, you know, it was a flesh wound.
Do any of these precious little calculations take into the fact that the Texans are probably going to rest all their players and it won't matter anyway?
No, that would be a problem.
Yeah, all your little 12% goes down to like 0.12%.
Allow people to dream.
To Miami we go. On to Miami.
Coming from the dirt nap guy, that's funny. It's only when it's your Raiders involved.
Here it is.
A fun story.
Off the holder. Sanders trying to
don't
win
play
it
off,
Miami.
Wes.
Hold it down. Kick is up. And the kick is good. And the Miami Dolphins have defeated the Cincinnati Bengals 38-35 in overtime. Miami goes to 4-11 on the season. The Bengals fall to 1-14 in one of the most unusual games in the history of this stadium.
I mean, let's hear it then. You don't get many wins, Jimmy Cephalo. Dolphins Radio Network. The Dolphins gave up 16 points in the final 29 seconds of regulation, but somehow regrouped, getting a Jason Sanders 37-yarder in OT, 38-35 dub for the Dolphins. Miami had a 35-12 lead with less than 7 minutes to play but watched Andy Dalton go ginger nuclear to force overtime. The big picture, Mark, the Bengals are 1-14 and now own the number one overall pick in the 2020 draft, and you can't take it away from them. Hello, Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, for a minute that we were witnessing insane, glowing red ginger man revenge on the organization he'll likely not be with next year by orchestrating this ferocious comeback. And, you know, had they won, and they didn't, and had something stuff happen next week, you know, they would not have had the number one overall pick, and Joe Burrow would be going somewhere else potentially. Would have been a delicious Andy Dalton narrative to close the year. I mean, if I were the if I were the Bengals owner, I would have called down when they were trying to essentially tie the game to go into overtime with a 2-point conversion. And they, I would have said, you listen, if Andy Dalton doesn't fire this ball into the stands, everyone down there is gone. And instead, they're toying with fate going into overtime. But the Dolphins, who had an incredible game today from Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is just playing as well as anyone around at this point, they squeaked it out. Wes, you watch this too. Do you have anything else you want to say?
You guys tag team this.
Yeah, we tag team delightfully.
It was, this game started out total yards. 159-1 Dolphins over Bengals. And I had written in my notes when I turned the game off with about 40 seconds left, I really stayed with it for a long time. This game not nearly as close as the final score will be.
That was 35-19.
It was 35-19 with 30 seconds left. And then the Bengals scored a touchdown on fourth down, had a 2-point conversion, had a successful onside kick, had a 29-yard touchdown with the clock hitting zero, then had an untimed 2-point conversion, all in the final 30 seconds of the game. I don't think we've ever seen that before.
No, that was remarkable that they did that. And it worked out perfectly because, yes, Wes, as you pointed out, what would be more Cincinnati Bengals than this being, you know, they lose out on Burrow because of this insane one in a trillion scenario, and then whoever goes with the first quarterback ends up being, you know, the next Tom Brady. That nothing would be more Bengals than that. So let's just be thankful that the Bengals fans had a fun little moment there. Andy Dalton had maybe his last great moment in a Cincinnati uniform, and they still got what they needed to get.
Well, fast forward to late April. No one knows who Mike Brown's going to take until they're on the clock, and there will be some speculation, you know, it's already started that he'll take Chase Young because he loves Ohio State guys, and he's a once-in-a-generation player.
See it.
And it's just Mike Brown, so we won't know until they actually call the pick. But, we'll, you know, we've got 4 months to talk about
the scouting report.
Open for business.
The joke in scouting circles is the Bengals will draft the best Big Ten player available every year. So, of course, it would be Chase Young. But there's another factor here. The Bengals are very – this goes for all Cincinnati sports teams. They love Ohio people.
He's
and Joe
Ohio.
Burrow is from Athens, Ohio.
Perfect.
That's
so cool. They'll probably take him because they do love the local
Don't
connection.
Don't worry, Bengals fans.
Is it,
this should be covered.
Is it just assumed that the right coach for Joe Burrow and fill the blank is Zach Taylor
got
going
the
forward?
Season. Talk about
well, I'm we just, got no, the
I'm,
offseason.
No, I'm saying is, are we sure Who that they're bringing him back 100%?
I think so.
Do we know enough about what Zach Taylor's had with him this year? And do we know anything about Joe Burrow? I don't know.
This Dolphins team, we were questioning their very integrity early in the year. You know,
not folks. The players and coaches,
right? But the organization, and
the
they ended up now they're in the fifth pick. You know, they won four games. They played too well.
That Ryan doesn't say that we were wrong for questioning the front office for trying to tank a season.
Sure,
they have,
but
a
just
coach.
More that the NFL. There was talk, and we had it on this podcast that the talent level really wasn't that different. Ultimately, because it's the NFL and all these players are at least good enough. Ryan Fitzpatrick now has as many four touchdown games in his career than Matt Ryan or Tony Romo or John Elway.
Put him in Canton. All right, now on to Sunday night.
Third down and 5 for the Chiefs at the 12 of the Bears. No score. Big rush to the outside. Mahomes will scramble. He's at the 10. He's at the 5. Touchdown! Kansas City! Patrick Mahomes runs it in from 12 yards. And the Chiefs get a touchdown on their first drive of the game.
Mitch Holthus, Chiefs Radio Network. Yes, Sunday Night Football. It looked like a mismatch on paper, and that's exactly how it turned out. Patrick Mahomes got the Chiefs going with that rushing touchdown. The knee looking pretty good, I might add. And the Bears never really threatened. 26-3, the final score. Kansas City moves to 11-4, keeping themselves in the conversation for a first-round bye as we head toward Week 17. The Bears playing out the string, and Bears fans who were loyal enough, or, you know, they were already in the hole for the tickets, to go to this game at Soldier Field, got some booing in on Trubisky and the Bears' offense, which was inefficient as ever, Greg Rosenthal. But that's story for another time. The Chiefs keep rolling.
It's part of the story here because this Chiefs defense is good enough, especially stopping the pass, to hold a really bad offense to 26 yards of passing at halftime, which is what the Chiefs did today. They are able to just strangle these poor teams, and we saw it last week against the Broncos, to the point where you feel like Patrick Mahomes in these couple weeks, it's like, you know, it's like Michael Jordan going out on like a back-to-back against the Suns. Hey, we only need like 27 and, you know, 5 out of you tonight. Let's save the real fireworks for the bigger challengers up the road.
Chris Jones and Frank Clark are healthy up front. They add Terrell Suggs. Juan Thornhill and Honey Badger feel like they're playing as one of the best safety duos in the league over the past month. And this pass defense gets better every week to the point where I think they're as good as teams like the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, what defenses – look, the Patriots –
Patriots and Bills have better secondaries, probably.
They do, but even the best defenses that are making the playoffs, and I include the Patriots and the 49ers in this, I just don't feel that they're going to come in and, like, shut teams down every game. And the Chiefs have holes, but their defense is good enough. They're going to be competitive with anyone. I don't think they're going to be the reason that they don't go
far. I love the way they're winning games. I mean, last year it was, you know, every game, you know, you knew the defense was going to give up 27 points, and you had to have monster performances from Mahomes and the rest. And, yeah, you're playing a bad opponent today, but they made the Bears look as bad as ever. I mean, drives of 14, 4, 32 yards in the first half, a total disaster. I mean, the Bears' offense is offensive to the eyes. And we are a week away from saying farewell to 20 teams, and they are the one, and I think their fans would agree, that I cannot wait to say goodbye to. They need a long winter's nap, and I don't want to hear from them until August.
After 6 primetime games this year, I'm guessing it was 6, that's the max.
They will be penalized.
They'll be down to, let's say, 2 to 3.
Yes, and maybe if they truly deserve a punishment for inflicting 6 primetime games upon us.
Including the kickoff game.
Just give them a Thursday night game next year to reestablish their value. Robert Mays made a good point. Robert Mays of The Ringer, who does good work over there. He made, you know, this game was the connection, obviously, between Patrick Mahomes, who was picked after Mitch Trubisky, infamously, Chicago traded up to go get Trubisky while there were superstar quarterbacks to be. Still on the board. Mays wrote, Patrick Mahomes was an incredibly difficult evaluation who landed in a perfect situation. Deshaun Watson was one of the greatest college QBs ever. Passing on him is the franchise-altering mistake. That's just, this game was a reminder, and when fans in Chicago are booing loudly, it's because this is going to stick in their craw for a generation. That they picked the wrong guy. And now that decision will be big. What do the Bears do next at that position, whether it's bringing in competition or finding a way out of the relationship entirely? But I want to make one more point about the Chiefs defense, who, as we've established, is playing really well right now. This is their 5th consecutive game now where they've allowed 17 points or less. And in these 5 games, they've allowed all wins, 17, 9, 16, 3, and 3 points. It's just different. It's when we talk about the Patriots are different this year. The offense is just different. The thing with the Chiefs is maybe they're not scoring the way that, and Mahomes isn't as, like, your eyes aren't popping out of your head watching what he's doing on a weekly basis. But this is a more rounded team, and they continue to kind of lay in the weeds in the AFC as a team not to look past and a team that can absolutely go on a run, especially if they close out and they take care of business at home against the Chargers and then get a break. And what is the break they need to get a bye?
They need the Patriots to lose to the Dolphins. It's the type of thing that hasn't happened in this Patriots run where they end up giving the break to another team. That would make their life, the Chiefs, that is, a lot easier. But they are 7-1 on the road, and if any team could beat New England and Baltimore in a row on the road, I think it's this Chiefs team. Their one road loss was that crazy game in Tennessee, which they should have won a few different ways. And even if the score wasn't that high, it's like, Kelce is healthy, and Tyreek Hill's healthy, and Patrick Mahomes, as you saw with the speed on that rushing touchdown, is healthy. They barely touch. You know, Khalil Mack had the only quarterback hit on Patrick Mahomes the entire night. They're not touching him. Like, everything is just, if you're a Chiefs fan, you just want to get past next week healthy and get on, because I think they got a chance here.
All of this is true. We all love how they're playing. It should be acknowledged that during this stretch where they're allowing 9.8 points per game on defense, they've played the Chargers, Raiders, Patriots, Broncos, and Bears. There's not a good offense in the bunch.
Yep. Right. That's why they'll give up points and yards against a good team, but I think they can score with anyone. And I know Ravens fans don't think it matters that much, but they've had the, they had the Ravens numbers the last 2 years. They beat them pretty soundly.
Is Mitch Trubisky the week one starter in Chicago next year?
No, I don't think so.
I just don't know how you can do this again. But I've been tough on him, maybe overly so at times, but you know, unless the, you, the, their GM won Executive of the Year while in amid making all these decisions, and they're hamstrung.
Mike Maccagnan.
So the award is not indicative of
Tulane
of
product,
the future,
though.
But
Ryan Pace and great hair, and he'll get a chance to rebuild this team. I don't know if Trubisky will get a chance.
One's knocking the hair.
I got a text, Ryan Pace text, while we were recording the podcast today from an unnamed, highly esteemed member of talent here at NFL Network, saying, "Ryan Pace, great hair, good looking." Gonna dig in on that,
but as in questioning if those
like
two things
a little bit of a surprise. Did we kind of miss the boat on this?
Oh,
and I certainly will be doing
that.
Research.
Feels like a David Ely text.
I said talent.
Feels
all
like
right.
An Ian Rappaport text.
All right, let's get out of here. It's Please. Been a long day. A reminder again: the Miami Improv, the Thursday before the Super Bowl, January 30th, 7:30 p.m. We will be doing our live podcast, the now annual Super Bowl show. Tickets available at what I believe is not an offensive cost, and you get to have a good football show that gets you ready for the big game.
Oh. Yes.
Exactly. Wes is pumped up about it. And we will be back. Are we going up Monday night with a show or Tuesday? We'll figure that out. But we will be giving you all the content you need on Christmas week. Do not worry. We'll have the wrap-up of Week 16 with that big Vikings-Packers tilt. And then you'll have the Christmas holiday. And then right on the other side of that, yes, the preview of Week 17. We don't stop. Other people stop.
No break.
We do not stop. All right. Stan Hans is signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood, and everybody behind the glass. Thank you. Till Tuesday.